We gaan facetimen met iemand die eigenlijk ja, ook weer niet echt voor de camera staat de laatste tijd. Iemand die onherkenbaar in beeld moet zijn. Hij heeft ook Formule 1 gereden, hij heeft Le Mans gereden. Maar we kennen hem inmiddels als de originele stick. De allereerste man die in het programma Top Gear van de BBC die onherkenbare coureur was. Zijn naam Perry McCarthy. En let op, Perry, goedenavond.
Goedenavond.
Hoe gaat het met jou?
Ja, alles goed. Dank je wel.
Alles goed, dank je wel. Ja, Perry, you speak a little bit of Dutch because before...
Een heel klein beetje.
Yeah, before everything happened, you used to work for, I think it was Shell, wasn't it? Painting their oil rigs?
Yeah, Shell and BP.
Yeah.
NAM, a lot of the time, you know, Royal Dutch Shell.
Yeah.
So, and it was all off the Dutch coast. And so I worked with a few Dutch guys who were great fun.
Yeah.
And they used to teach me a little bit of Dutch. But
We won't go through all your Dutch knowledge of the Dutch language, Barry. Barry, we come back to the race in a minute, but your Twitter account says the original stick. How did that come about? That the BBC asked you, or maybe Jeremy Clarkson asked you, to be their stick?
Well, it didn't exist. What happened was that, yeah, I mean, you know, my career was full of ups and downs, etc. And there's a reason for mentioning this. So I wrote my book, Flat Out, Flat Broke, normally published by Haynes, $9.99, available in a good bookshop near you.
Oh, no,
also
yeah, yeah.
Available on Kindle.
I know. I mean, it's one of the best motor racing books you can read. So we've done
plug
that.
It, Alan. Plug it.
Anyway.
But that was back in 2002, and we had this great big book launch, this great big party in London. And a lot of friends from Formula One and motor racing and TV and stuff like that, they were all there, come and support me. We had a great time. And one of them was Jeremy Clarkson, along with Andy Willman. He's series producer and he's a great friend. And it was there that Jeremy said to me, hey, listen, Top Gear has been off air, hasn't been broadcast for quite a long time back then, but we're going to bring it back. And we've got this idea for you. So I said, yeah, go on. So he said, yeah, we want you to be this secret racing driver. And you probably remember that the original stick, me, was all in black.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeremy said, so you're going to wear black boots, black overalls, black gloves, black hair helmet, a black visor, and we're going to call you the Gimp.
Yeah, right.
I said, no, you're not. So anyway, I like the idea, and I said, but I'm not doing the game. And that went back and forward for a little while, and then finally they settled on the stick. And that was it. So that's how we kicked it off back in 2002. Of course, none of us knew how big the show was going to be, or how big, you know, Stiggy was going to be.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's a lot of people involved with the program like that. I mean, and it's, I mean, the end, you know, someone who got fired from the show sort of, said it was you, but how do you keep it a secret? I mean, there is even a rumor you drove onto the premises with your helmet on.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I used to stop down the road because the test track was out in the country. So just before I pulled up to the security gates, I'd stop, put my crash helmet on, and I'd often put on a French accent. So a lot of people actually thought it was Jean Lacy to begin with, so, you know, I would speak very much like this behind the pressure on it, you know, and of course you like that. And inside, I was really laughing sometimes. But so we went to quite a few lengths to try and protect the identity. I think a few people knew it was me immediately because, you know, my legs.
I was going to say the way you walk. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Allard. So that was one of the things, and I think that I was kind of fairly well known for crossing my arms because so much was going wrong in the race career. I'd often be standing like that, so people were thinking, looks like Perry, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was it was good fun at the time. Not something I wanted to continue with, I might add.
No, but for a couple of years, it was good fun.
Well, actually, just the 1 year, you know, it was okay, but...
you got paid. Perry, you got paid.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, to be quite honest, at that same time, Audi were employing me, and, if you wasn't in Formula One, then it was kind of good to be driving for Audi because they were they really looked after all of us. So that was very good. So that was great. But it wasn't a question of the money or anything like that. I just was kind of a bit bored with it.
Yeah.
You're a racer, Allard, and so am I.
Yeah.
You know, being alone on a test track, even though I was giving it everything I had with every single car, obviously. But, you know, at the end you go...
Yeah. What's the best car you drove around that test track?
I would say the one I kind of remember the most was the Pagani Zonda.
You didn't go off with that one, did you?
No, that was the other stick who went off in a Koenigsegg.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Because he got a bit of oversteer. Yeah. And then what he did was lifted off the accelerator way too quickly, which then threw him into the wall.
So the Pagani Zonda, was it special?
Was it what?
Special. Was it that good?
Yeah, it was great fun. But I tell you what made it really difficult, though. So you've got this kind of bubble supercar thing going along. But you know when you can adjust a steering column, you know?
Yeah.
The wheel go up or come in and out like that. And then you relock it. Well, their lock pin broke as they delivered it. So you're in this really powerful, I think it was, I don't know, 700 brake horsepower, whatever it was, you know? Yeah. Flat out. And I'm going around the corners. And the steering's going like this, and I'm going, "Wow, this is wild!" So that was. It's like three-dimensional.
Yeah, that's kind of, you can't even hang on for dear life at the steering wheel then. Like
exactly. Yeah. You know, if you went like that, you just end up with a steering wheel in your face.
Was the first time I actually remember meeting you, Perry, is 1983. And I was the thing I remember then was like you had a brand new Van Diemen, Lee Cooper on it. I thought, gee, he has a big sponsor, must have lost some money.
No, I was still using some of the money that I'd earned on the oil rigs.
Yeah, because you worked on the oil rigs, made enough money to go motor racing, basically.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't even realise it was a big gamble. You know, if you're a racer like you, we just set sail, get in a car and pray that we can do something and get going, you know. But, I mean, I'd come off the rigs and started in 1982. So, you know, I was like 21 by the time I got on track. Yeah. So I'm against all these guys that have been karting and everything else. And I'm not being big-headed. There's only one thing to do. I kind of had to beat them.
Yeah.
Fast.
Yeah.
Or I was finished. You know, that's all there is to it. There wasn't, you know, I hear so many people say, yes, and this will be my learning year, and this will be my that year. And that, well, really, where's the money coming from?
You know? Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I was talking to Johnny Herbert earlier, and he said, like, all these drivers now have to get used to this. We have to get used to the team. It wasn't like that. You got your Formula Ford, your mechanic, go racing, and you had to win from the word go.
Well, you had to, yeah, because it was either that or forget it. I mean, it was tough enough.
Yeah.
Winning and still coming through,
yeah.
You know, because it's, as you very well know, and all us racers know, is that, you know, the Americans say with the NASA program, no Bucks, no Buck Rogers, and in England, we've got no Sterling Moss.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to find the money.
Yeah.
But what I did was, you know, I was fortunate, you know, I started winning and then won the British Championship. And that, so I've started making a name quite quickly. But then I had, you remember, the fairly big crash.
Yeah.
In fact, a really big crash.
Wait, you met John Booth, who later ran Man of Motorsport in Formula One.
Yeah.
On track.
I won't blame John.
No.
It was a racing accident, you know. Yeah. It was a racing accident that was totally his fault. But apart from that, now it was one of those things, you know.
Yeah.
But I broke my back in that, and that put me out for nearly a year. And then by the time I came back, we had virtually no budget, and I was in Formula Ford again, and I didn't want to be there. And it showed. My results in 85 really weren't that great, but I used the entire year to try and make sure I got the money and the sponsorship and the recognition to get into Formula 3.
Yeah, by I would say abusing James Hunt.
Say it again.
You abused. Oh, yeah.
You abused James.
Well, you used him. You used his voice. I mean, that's a true story. I mean, you did every trick you could think of. You would do like the posh. I am James Hunt. I'm working with this really good racing driver, Barry McCarthy. I think you should talk to him, and then you would turn up. Sorry, James couldn't make it today.
I'm terribly sorry, but James isn't well, you know. And I did that trick once, and it was the head guy, I think, at the computer company, Atari.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I couldn't get into these people, and suddenly I talked to the secretary, and she's got the James on. I've gone, yes, absolutely. I'm representing a young boy called Perry McCarthy. I believe you'd be crazy not to back him. He's going all the way to Formula One. Look, I'll come in and see Graham. When can he make it? So she's going, Tuesday afternoon. I said, okay, great. I put the phone down. And I've arrived there, and of course, she's gone, where's James? And I said, really disappointed. He's not very well. And so she's shown me up to the chairman's office, and I'm walking toward his desk, and he's just looking at me going,
yeah, right.
And I've got close to him, and he looks up, and he's going, nice try, son. Get out. And I just started laughing. I just went,
yeah, well, you tried, but then you got a sponsor. And then, I mean, part of your, well, call it luck. I mean, you've got there's this big group of Formula One drivers, British Formula One drivers called the Red Pack. There was Mark Blundell, Johnny Herbert, Damon Hill, Julian Bailey, maybe even Martin Brundle, Mark Blundell, all English, all coming through, going to Formula One. And you were actually part of them, so you were up against some really serious competition.
Yeah, I mean, when we were in Formula 3, I think 9 of us that year made it through to Formula 1. And I kind of think that we knew it was a pretty special year anyway. But, you know, it sharpens you up being against those boys. You know, you get faster and you become more determined and start learning a bit more and thinking, okay, crikey, I might stand a chance at this. But I always, you know, sometimes it's really good to be stupid. Because I always thought I was going to get to Formula One, you know, and I didn't have any experience of motor racing. If I had had experience of motor racing, I would have realized it was virtually impossible to get to Formula One. But because I didn't know about that, every hour of my day was spent thinking, I'm going to be a Formula One driver, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess that's the same for quite a few of the others. So you hang on for dear life, you try to make the next step, you try and train and you try and do this. But it's, as you know, it's a tough game.
Well, you did test for, was it Footwork? You tested for Williams, Benetton even.
Benetton.
You know, so the top teams were actually trying to look for test drivers. And you did go out. And then in the end, you end up with, for me, the worst team in Formula One ever.
Thank you. It's an achievement.
It's an achievement. But Perry, I mean, Andrea Moda, I mean, that was like, it was, the team was fluked. You shouldn't have gotten your super license, but you did, and they couldn't retract it. And you, I mean, the way you did, was it nine times you turned up at the Grand Prix? And I think you did 9 laps in all the Grand Prix pre-qualifying combined.
Yeah, it was 13 laps, Allard. Yeah, so I had to be there.
Yeah, but I mean, and it was like, I remember in the book, you're saying you're doing the was it the Page and Moy or the Grand Prix, I mean, I remember you coming to the French Grand Prix on a bus with, because you had no money. I mean, no money, Perry, come on, no money. And you're a Formula One driver. I mean, and you have to brag, you know, use a ticket company to get to the track.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just...
That's determination.
You either do all that stuff or don't go. If you don't have any money, then it's pointless moaning. It just, you've got to find a way to do this. And unfortunately, an awful lot of my career was actually spent trying to find a way to do it.
But Perry, you find me a person, and you can tell the story yourself. I mean, the story, you going to the Monaco Grand Prix, you find someone to do that, to be have that determination, handing out tickets at Gatwick.
Do you know the rest of that story?
Yeah, I do, but you can.
Okay. Because I was working for a courier company, I think it was Checkers Travel. It was called Checkers Travel. So they had a load of people going out there. So they've said to me, look, Perry, we'll pay for your flights out to Monaco. We've got a little hotel room for you. We'll pay for that as well. But you need to help us at the airport handing out the tickets. And then when you're in Monaco, you give a speech to our group of people.
Yeah.
So I said, fine. No problem. It gets me out there, gets me in the hotel. You know, that's it. So this is God's honest truth. I'm handing out tickets. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Brown. Hi, thank you very much. Go to gate 14. Everybody's just going, oh, thank you. No idea what I do, you know. So, Mr. and Mrs. Green, thank you very much. And all of a sudden, one of the women said, she said, oh, are you coming out? So I said, yes, madam, I have to be there. She said, why is that? I said, I'm one of the racing drivers. She said, oh, do you all do this? So I said, yeah, there's Nigel Mansell over there with Paige and Moyle.
Now, we can talk for hours. I want to skip a couple of years, go to Le Mans, because you did Le Mans, well, as a stig almost, for the movie, the Valiant movie. You drove a Panos, I think, didn't you?
Oh, the Michel Vallion movie.
So that wasn't really in the race. But what is like, here comes Perry's luck. He's in a car able to at least go for a podium. And his experienced teammate, who's won Le Mans, decides to try squeeze another lap. And just parks the car after 28 laps somewhere because he runs out of fuel.
Yeah, that was even worse.
I mean, and this is like Frank Bieler, who's won Le Mans. You're with a good team. I think it was Bieler, Salo, Mika Salo and you in the car. And you didn't even get to drive it in the race. I mean, that is, your luck, Perry.
It's the only time I've ever got paid more than Michael Schumacher on a lap-for-lap basis.
We can laugh about it now, but then...
Well, this is the one you're talking about, obviously, was with Audi.
Yeah.
Because I'd driven for Audi when they first launched their sports car team in 1999. Yeah. And that was wonderful. And I drove for the English team and also the German team. And then in 2003, we're thinking, okay, right, we stand a chance. I mean, to be honest, Allard, we wouldn't have won because the Bentleys
were too fast. Yeah, it was the Bentley.
Quite right. Yeah. A podium was totally on.
Yeah.
So... Mika and I just said to Frank, look, you know, we can come up to speed like that. So, Frank, you spend nearly all the time in the car to get the car right, you know, throughout the week. Mika and I did the minimum amount of laps, but neither of us were too bothered. We're pretty confident about it, you know. So then Frankie started the race, and I've gone to sleep out the back because Mika was going to be next in, you know. And about... I don't know, whatever it was, an hour and a half later, Mick has come in my little cabin at the back of the pits. And he's gone, wake up. So I said, well, he said, we're out of the rest. That's my Finnish accent.
Yeah.
it sounds very much like Kimmy's accent, but it's not. It's Mika's accent, you know? And he said, we're out of the rest. I said, why? He said, it's run out of fuel. And I went, oh, for Christ's sake, no. You know? And Frankie, I mean, I love Frank to bits. Yeah. He's a great driver. He's great fun. But he got it wrong. He was coming up to come into the pits because he'd been radioed.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd come up on the steering wheel. Pits. And he's coming up to the pits. And he overtook a car just before the pits, but misjudged it. So he's still on the outside of the car as the car's passing the entry to the pits.
And he missed the pit entry.
So he missed the pit lane.
Yeah.
Well, of course, then he's got to try to help the car for 8 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, or whatever that is.
Yeah, 13 kilometres. Yeah.
All the way around the track. And it didn't get home.
Yeah,
So that was it. You know, people say motor racing's dangerous, Allard, but it's not the way I do it.
Oh, well, don't be hard on yourself. It's actually funny. You mentioned Audi and you mentioned the British Audi team. That was run by John Wickham.
Yeah, and Richard Lloyd.
And John was also the one who got you into a footwork, your first.
Yeah, John's
very keen. What I'm trying to get is like the personal contacts you had in those days, from those days, like early Formula 4 days, when you meet people like then Eddie Jordan, who was a Formula 3 team owner and things, is also important, Perry. The fact, you know, those little contacts are oh so important.
I'm not completely clear I would agree with the word contact. So I think that
friends.
If you're fortunate, you come through and there's a bunch of people that believe in you.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, being selfish, hopefully those people will have good jobs inside a big team where they can say, we want you. And I do know that John did want me, not just as test driver, he wanted me to drive for him in Arrows.
Yeah.
But of course, the team was owned by Jackie Oliver. Now, I like Jackie, I really do. But back then, I think Jackie probably needed some sponsorship for me to get in, and they already had, they had a couple of drivers anyway. But I would have been very, very happy driving at Arrows, to be quite honest, you know. So that was close. And Ken Tyrrell had me in once because Ron Torinac, when I drove for Ron in the International Formula 3000 for the Works Rap team, Ron then went straight over to Ken Tyrrell and just said, look, you've got to have Perry in the Tyrrell team. And that was kind of close. I won't bore you with all the details about it, but then it didn't work. But that's, you know, a bit of my story, really. There were a whole bunch of times where, wow, that was really close. Because I know Ken, you know, liked me, and people Benetton liked me, and people here liked me. But it was always the wrong... always the wrong time, to be honest, you know, so...
Well, it's a story of your life. However, Perry, if I look sort of through that window where I think your wife just walked through the garden, there's who's... incident. It's the same... I mean, Karen, your wife, you've been with for as long as I've almost known you.
220 years now, yeah.
Yeah. There's kids, there's a good life. No regrets. You're enjoying life.
Certainly enjoying life. Regrets, yeah, no, there's been a few. Maybe, you know, sometimes maybe I created my own bad luck.
Well, there's one. I wouldn't go into the Lotus saga. The one of the funny things Jan Lammers said about you is Perry will talk himself into and out of a drive.
Yeah,
and if he's unlucky in the same sentence.
Jan is so funny.
Yeah.
I tell you something, is that as a complete natural talent, I think Jan Lammers is brilliant. I really do. And I also think I've always liked Jan. We've always really got on. Jan's a little bit naughty on that one because they weren't putting me in the car. So Jan was always in the car and I was getting really pissed off. Yeah. I mean, really pissed off about it. And I just didn't like the attitude of the people at Lotus either. So it was kind of, it was going to end like that, you know? So I probably had some help in launching myself out of that team. But as I say, nothing against Jan, because I think the world of Jan Lammers, I really do.
Jan says the same about you, Perry.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
But with Lotus, no, I was really so upset with the people who ran Lotus that I have never, ever talked to them again.
I wasn't going to mention it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Look, see what I mean? It's actually lit a fuse straight away because you know what I'm like. I'm determined, but I'm kind of easygoing. But on this, no, you know? Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks very much for your time.
Is that it? We're going to finish on a real high note, like Lotus.
Well, let's finish on a real high note. Am I right? You had something to do with Scott McLaughlin.
No.
You were managing a racing driver.
Yeah, and no, I helped out Scott Pye.
Scott Pye, yeah. Who went back to Australia and did V8 Supercars.
Yeah, he didn't have any money, and I saw a lot of similarities, and he'd recently lost his father. So I brought him over to England, got him a Formula Ford drive. I put some money in to help him out, and then arranged a load of sponsorship and commercial opportunities to get him into Formula 3. So he did that, and then he went back to
Australia.
And pursued a career in supercars there. So, you know, we gave him a hand, gave him a leg up, and I kind of, when I'm able to, I do that with, you know, a lot of people. And funny enough, I've been giving a little bit of a hand to a Somalian boxer recently who's trying to get to the Olympics. So, you know, when people call up, if I've got the time, I'll spend a little bit of time on saying, okay, do this, do that, and make a couple of phone calls or whatever. Yeah. I don't want it as a business.
Try and help.
I've got, you know, a very big business on something else, to be quite frank. So this is...
No, but you try to help someone who wants to be successful and is determined to put in the time and the effort.
If I can see something a little bit special, and if I can just, you know, just provide a bit of... This isn't an open door to anybody who wants to call up. You know, look, Alad, you've come through this the hard way, and this is a message I'll give to everybody, is that the number one thing about this entire deal is that if you're determined to stay in motor racing and not just have fun, but to come through all the way through, that it's not a game. It's not a hobby. Finding sponsorship is what is ultimately necessary, and you have to just dedicate yourself to finding out how to do that and keep trying and keep trying. And the biggest thing, again, I keep saying, as you know, the biggest thing is to survive disappointment and to keep believing you can get there and to keep going.
Yeah.
Now, when that all gets too much, as it does for most people, is that they quit.
Yeah.
But maybe they can turn around and think, okay, I gave it a go. But it depends on how obsessive you are, how fixated with getting there. And I guess really that was my story about coming through. And I still, even after all that work, honest to God, I still needed some luck, which I did have, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll tell you something. I want to end like this. If you want a lesson in beating disappointment, go online and get flat out, flat broke, because it's a brilliant read and there's so many lessons to be learned in there. And it's it's funny as well, Barry.
It's going really well. We sold another copy just last year.
thank you very much. And let's hope this lockdown thing is unlocked soon and I'll come and see you.
Yeah, that'll be lovely. Karen would love to see you. Thanks, Alad.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will. Tot ziens.
Tot ziens.